श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौराध महादेव की जय, ग्रंथराय श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि बोल। सो प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू, वेलकम, गुड आफ्टरनून टू the ones present here and the ones present online as well. So, sorry for that, I just realized. And
just water.
Yeah. So today we are recontinuing with a series of lectures that actually we have been starting some weeks ago in Kansas on the Brahma Stuti. So since it's my first lecture here on this side of the country, I will make just very briefly mentions what we were speaking about these days in case you were not able to follow. And then we will continue with today's lecture, which is 7th lecture, and we will see 5th verse of Brahma Stuti. So basically Brahma Stuti means, or Brahma Stava means, the prayers of Brahma. We know who Brahma is. And this happens in the context of he is witnessing an overdose of Aishwarya, we could say, in the less expected place that you may think about, but actually the place where most Aishwarya resides, which is Vrindavan. So in his attempt to test Krishna, because as we know, Krishna was with his friends in the picnic, and full informality, and first picnic in their Prakat Lila, so you can imagine the first picnic of your life, how you feel. So full of informality, and all the boys breaking all the possible rules of Vaishnava etiquette, you can imagine that Brahma was following so seriously. So Brahma was a little bit like overwhelmed by this already. So there were different levels of Vimohan. Vimohan means bewilderment of Ram. So we mentioned how Brahma having four heads, as the Brahma Vimohan Lila unfolded, one head started to spin, two heads started to spin, three heads started, and finally he attained like accomplishment in Vimohan, no? And the four heads were like full speed. No, first like seeing this picnic, then when he kidnapped the cubs and the boys, as we know, he put so quote unquote in a cave, and he returned from Brahmaloka after a moment, and he realized everything continues as normal because Krishna had expanded himself as each one of them. So second head start to spin, and Brahma goes to the cave, and the boys and the calves, which were illusory expansions of them, were there. And Brahma returns to Vrindavan, and all of them are there. And he goes quickly to the two places and thinks, maybe Krishna's taking them and putting them in one place, and then when I'm not there. So at this point, again, two heads spinning, half Vimohan, if you will. And then Krishna shows full Aishwarya and shows how from each of these calves and boys, a form of Narayan, and Brahmas worshipping, different Brahmas worshipping each of those Vishnu forms, and Brahma witnessing that. So at this point, three heads were like full speed, and the last remaining one came when Krishna like make all that disappear, and just he himself remained as a little boy with a morsel of food in his left hand, and just like looking for his boys and calf, where are all of them, and four heads of Brahma. So he fell from the swan down to earth, offered pranam to Krishna, praying very deeply, and the result of those prayers is what we are studying here, called Brahma Stuti, the prayers of Brahma, after this unique section of the Bhagavatam that, as we mentioned, fully establishes the main idea of the Bhagavatam, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And also through these prayers that happen to be in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Brahma also is, at the beginning of creation, he expressed a desire to taste Sakya Bhav with Krishna. So Krishna said, okay, we signed the contract here, and in time all this will play out. So in this Brahma Vimohan Lila, Brahma got the trailer of his prospect, if you will. He was not able to fully digest it. But in these prayers, we will see Brahma somehow seeing now the object of his affection, the object of his longing, no, Krishna, in a corresponding form for Sakya Bhav. So he's seen his ultimate is the death, but at the same time, he was accustomed for quite a long time to relate to Krishna in more serious terms, if you will, as he did at the beginning of creation and so on. So now he's starting, he's sudden and mature to the point of him feeling attraction towards that form of Krishna as the object of Sakyabhava. And I'm feeling I'm being attracted to that. So while he's praying in this chapter, he's kind of trying to make sense. Is it okay what I'm feeling? What, how to play this out, and how to find philosophical support to the attraction I'm feeling by seeing this form of Krishna. So we'll see that throughout the Brahma Stuti, which are 40 verses in total. I don't have a clue when I will finish this series, to be honest. throughout these 40 verses, Brahma is kind of, how to say, he's trying to explain to himself his inner affinity in philosophical terms. Well, he's in the concept of doing so, he's actually establishing the Gaudiya Siddhanta, which is universal for whatever affinity you may have. It's universal for all of us, but as my Guru Maharaj pointed to me, it's important to bear in mind which is actual Brahma's actual affinity, which is Sakya. So he's establishing this universal Siddhanta, which applies to all of us, but his desired bhava is in terms of Sakya. So in that sense, the format of the classes had been just, well, doing as usual a recap of the previous classes. We will do now reading the verse and the word by word, and also then I will share Bhava Nubad, which is kind of an explanation of the verse in the words of Guru Maharaj, which he will include in his forthcoming book, Sakya Mandal, but he generously allowed me to... I asked him the blessings to speak on Brahma Stuti, and he told me, oh, I wrote a commentary on Brahma Stuti in my forthcoming book. Okay, so... I mean, great. So, is that implication there? So he generously extended the opportunity to share those ideas with all of you. So I will be reading that, and after that, I will share in some other ideas according to the main other ancient, if you will, elder commentators, and let's try to make sense all together about the ideas here. So today we will be seeing again verse number 5. So we have been already having 2 introduction classes and then 1 class per verse. So today's verse, Brahma will point in the direction of how yoga bears fruit only through bhakti. And the whole Brahma Stuti is a glorification of bhakti, directly or indirectly, by showing the glories of bhakti, by showing how other processes depend on bhakti to have success in their ultimate reach. And so on. And the more Brahma is getting to the conclusion of his prayer, he will become more and more, how to say, emotional in the context of Braja Bhav and glorifying the inhabitants of Braj. But before reaching there, he's making a case in a more, if you will, general Siddhantic way. But again, let's make some brief recap from the last class, the previous one given in Kansas some day ago, when we saw verse number 4. So I will read the verse for you quickly and share some ideas, and then we go to today's verse, verse number 5. So in verse number 4, it's a pretty well-known one. Brahma is saying, O Almighty Lord, those who discard bhakti unto you, which is the means to supreme blessedness, and strive instead to attain realization of the radically unqualified absolute, Brahman, are left in the end with nothing more than their own labor, like those engaged in threshing coarse husks devoid of grain. So it's a pretty well-known verse. So again, as we mentioned, throughout this whole stuti or prayers, Brahma is only praising bhakti, but sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly, sometimes saying how great is bhakti because of this, or indirectly by saying, what happens if you don't include bhakti in the equation? So this is one of those examples. So, of course, in this verse, Brahma is using the term Shreya Shritim, which means bhakti is the path to the highest auspiciousness. Shreya means the ultimate long-term auspiciousness, and Shritim means path, or the path of blessedness. So he mentions that, like he makes this point, this is bhakti, like positive definition. But then he says, if you practice jnana without mixing bhakti, and he's used some strong words and strong samples. Basically, that's useless, basically saying. Other paths apart from bhakti, to begin with, and in the previous verse he's making a point, other paths are much more difficult than bhakti, and they depend on bhakti to give the results. They depend a lot on personal effort. They are not so much pointing to sheltering oneself in divine grace. While bhakti, in comparison, susukam kartam abhyayam, Krishna says in the Gita, bhakti is by comparison very easy to execute. Of course, that's not like a license for us to be lazy, because we can say, okay, no, our path is not about personal effort, it's just grace. And Guru Maharaj will say, you have to make effort in order to get grace. Yeah, it's about grace, but you have to do something for that to happen also. And you have to do considerable effort nonetheless. So it's important to bear this in mind. I mean, and I remember Guru Maharaj some, maybe years ago, he was describing to me, like he was reading something about very strong tapasya and sadhana that I think some Buddhist practitioners or some other lineages were doing in order to attain their goal. And there was so much, they were investing so much of their time and energy. And he was saying, although our path is of grace and so on, we should learn from that also. We shouldn't say, oh, they're just wasting their time because they're not mixing their practice with bhakti or something. Even if that would be the case, you should be learning. I mean, if that's so, I should be making the same or even more effort. It's not that with less effort, I attain more in bhakti. The idea is, well, what if you invest full effort to obtain grace in bhakti? What will be the result of that? Because if not, we will misread these type of sections. I don't know, the Bhagavatam, when Ajamil is just chanting Narayan and calling his son in Namavas, and he's basically taken to Vaikuntha almost. So the point is, okay, let's name your son, let's put your son some name of God, and you're done. Vaikuntha is waiting for you. That's not the point of the Bhagavatam. And the point is, if that happens just by singing in that way, what kaimutya nyaya means, if this is like this, what to speak of if you do it like that, no? So yeah, bhakti is easier by comparison, but doesn't mean that, okay, I can relax and just call my son some here and there with a God's name and that's all or something. No? So this verse, again, is trying to emphasize how any other process, I mean, bhakti does not depend on any other process, and any other process depends on bhakti, which is a pretty strong statement. So, you follow my point? Yes. Bhakti to give fruit, you need to mix bhakti with jnana, karma, yoga. But for all of those other processes to bear their particular fruit, whether it may be in the form of swarga, mukti, siddhi, bhakti is required in the equation. And of course, again, the conclusion is, if every other practice depends so much on bhakti, what if I only practice bhakti? If bhakti is so crucial for any path, what if I just jump into the crucial exclusively? No? That's basically the indirect way of pointing, do that. So this verse will say that indirectly again. If you just engage in jnana, in the pursuit of the radical, unqualified absolute, the result will, without bhakti, rejecting bhakti, no fruit will be there, basically. Only you will be inviting trouble, the commentators are saying. But on the contrary, even they say, if you practice bhakti, all the fruits of other processes will come by your practice of bhakti. Even if you are not interested in them, they may come. As a just like concomitant effect, something like that. So whatever situation you are in, the Bhagavatam say, akamo, sarva kamo, mamoksha kamo, if you have all desires, non-desire, some desires, one desire, two desires, whatever they may be, practice bhakti. And whatever you desire, that will come. Of course, our school is to practice in a particular way, but the point is, bhakti can afford anything, basically. But some people may not have full faith in that. They may feel that sounds too easy because they do not have faith in the power of bhakti, basically. So some other approaches are there. So the previous verse to this one, I'm sorry, we are still in the recap. The previous verse to this one, which was to verse 3, and a famous verse, Gyan Prayasuda Pasyana Manta Eva, there Brahma was promoting Gyan Sunya Bhakti. Now, reject all this Gyan approach and just Manta Eva, surrender to Bhagavan. You will be conquering the unconquerable, he's saying there. And this verse is saying the opposite thing. What happens to those? No, third verse say, reject Gyan, embrace full Bhakti. This verse is saying, what happens if you accept Gyan and reject Bhakti? And again, nothing happens. Or, if you want to put it better, something happens. The commentator says, with the example of the threshing of the empty husks, you will have only sore hands. Something happens. Sore hands, complete waste of time and headache. Something happens. If you want to put it more specifically, in connection to the example given. Of course, what this verse refers is to what sometimes called the Brahma body and the Maya body. Sometimes it's put in those words. The Brahma body is he who wants to attain Brahman, to reside eternally in that face of the Absolute, although it has no face, but an aspect of the Absolute. For whatever Sangha that person had as samskars in that direction. So that person will thread the path of Gyan, mixing it with Bhakti, but not rejecting Bhakti. Not offending Bhakti. So that person eventually attained his desired goal. But there are some people who reject Bhakti altogether and thread the path of Gyan, rejecting Bhakti. Those sometimes are called Maya bodies, we call them. So that means they won't attain Brahman even because of offense to Bhakti. Because again, any process depends on Bhakti, Gyan, any other process. So basically that's the idea of the previous class. And today Brahma will contrast this statement by speaking about how some yogis were successful in their yoga endeavors by mixing their paths with bhakti. So he's coming and going, making the same point, if you will. No? What happens if you reject bhakti? What happens if you mix your practice with bhakti? But the underlying idea is not just mix your practice with bhakti. The idea ultimate is just embrace bhakti, as we will see. So already, and in verse number 3, before going to the verse, with your permission, I'm going to two verses before. It's also, Rama is saying, stanesthita. Stanesthita srati gatam tanumam manovi. So stanesthita meant, no matter in which position you are in society, you just practice bhakti. So there Rama is saying, bhakti transcends varnashram. It doesn't matter, you are Brahmin, Grihastha, Kshatriya, man, woman, outcast, whatever. Bhakti. In other words, again, you don't need karma. You don't need to mix your bhakti with karma. Bhakti is above karma. So you can do away with karma, and then, again, in that same verse, Gyan Prayasuda, you can do away with Gyan. No need for karma, no need for Gyan, for pure bhakti. So now in this verse, Brahma will make it clear, no need for yoga either. In the sense of mentioning indirectly, yoga depends on bhakti. Again, you have to have trained eyes or ears. Now, when Brahma is saying, yoga depends on bhakti, I mean, the good hearer will say, okay, bhakti is the, as we were saying the other day, the real deal. No? So basically, that's how Brahma is, from different nuanced perspectives, trying to make this point. Bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. And a type of bhakti again. He already spoke about Gyan Sunya Bhakti. This bhakti devoid of a desire for mukti, devoid for separate interests. The very definition of Sudha Bhakti, Uttam Bhakti, Rupa Goswami is given, Anyavilasita Sunyam, Jnana Karmadina Britam. Rupa Goswami says, Gyan Karma Adi Anavritam. The type of bhakti that our Gaudiya school pursues is anavritam, means unencumbered by jnana, already that point was made, by karma, already that point was made in previous verses, and it will continue to be made, and adi, jnana karma adi, adi means etc. So etc. means everything else that is not karma nor jnana falls into that category. So yoga falls there, and so on. So real bhakti is unencumbered by all those things. You don't need all those things. Although you may be doing some of those things, for some reason it's not that you need them for bhakti to bear fruit. So when this verse will speak about yoga, the commentators will mention, in this case, yoga can refer to Ashtanga yoga, Patanjali's system, or also can refer to Nishkam Karma Yoga, which is kind of in between karma and jnana. Because karma in itself, maybe like karma kanda, following Varnashram and Vedic ritual for some desire for heavenly delights. And Nishkam Karma is a step above, as we know from the Gita, is I execute my duties detached from the result. And that will invoke detachment, I mean further detachment, jnana, and that qualifies my heart, my situation for jnana. So Nishkam Karma is between jnana and karma. So all the bases are covered, Brahma is saying. Maybe can be interpreted to us with Ashtanga, can be connected with Nishkam Karma. Whatever the case, all of them require bhakti to be successful. And again, bhakti does not require any of them to be successful. So, in this particular verse, this will be made. And also, as we will see, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Krishna will describe, will describe the main activities of bhakti, which are, which ones?
Hearing, chanting.
Okay, period. Hearing and chanting, yeah. Everything else will come from that. So that will be described here. So I'll read verse number 5. Sorry that I don't have anything to share with you to follow with me. But it says like this. It's the meter of the verses, Bamsa Shtabilam. Different meters, chandas throughout the different verses of the Brahma Stuti, not a single one. It says, Pureha bhumam bhavo pijoginas tadarpiteha nija karma labdhaya vibodhya bhaktya eva kathopanitaya prapediranjo chitate gatim param. Translation. Please bear in mind always the context, no? Brahma and which situations he is seeing, which is his prospect, what the thing that he has just experienced a few minutes ago, all this, try to keep that in the picture. Oh, unlimited, infallible Lord. So still there is some Aishwaryas we see. No, it's not that, okay, yeah, Brahma wants Sakyabha, but he's not just in full Gopa Bhavan. Hey, Paul, come, let's play. No, it's still like you are Bhagavan, because he's just realizing Krishna is too Bhagavan. So yeah, so it takes some time from thinking Krishna was an imposter, I will test him. Understanding, I want to be with friend with him in Sakyabha, and in between you have to pass through some lessons. And the main one is Krishna's two Bhagavan. So yeah, so these 40 prayers will pound on that post, basically, you know, which are required for someday forgetting that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, as we know, and entering in a relationship with him in another terms. So, oh, unlimited, infallible Lord, in the past, many yogis in this world offered their prescribed practices and even their worldly actions unto you. As a consequence of thus surrendering their actions unto you, they obtained bhakti in the form of hearing and recounting your narrations. Then, having directly realized the self by such bhakti alone, they easily attained your supreme destination. So that's basically today's verse, number 5. So let's go with the favorite sections of all of you, the word-by-word section. Hopefully, favorite. Pura, so first word is pura. So we can also learn some terms as well. Pura means previously, previously. Iha means here, referring in this world. So Brahma is speaking about some yogis from the past. Remember, who attained a particular result. Bhumam is a way of referring to Krishna's different meanings. Bhuman means, oh, unlimited, or also can mean, oh, you who own the earth. Who own Bhumi, you are Bhuman, basically. Like Shakti, Shaktiman. Bhumi, Bhuman. Baha, Baha, many. Api, even. Yogina, yogis. So in the past, all unlimited many yogis that arpita ihanija karma labdhaya, which was gained by means of desires and their own activities offered to you. We will see what they obtain. Vibhudhya, after understanding. Bhakti eva, only by bhakti. So after understanding that only by bhakti they could attain what they wanted. Kata upanitaya, cultivated through hearing and chanting topics about you. So they engaged in bhakti. Prapedire, they achieved by surrender. Anjaha, easily. Achitta, another name for Krishna, which means this one, you know. Yeah. Oh, infallible one. Te, your gatim param. So gatim means destination and param means supreme. So they attain your supreme abode or their supreme desired destination. So let's go to the commentary on this verse by Guru Maharaj, which according to what he shared to me will be called Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubad. So Bhavanubad is something like a commentary following the spirit of the verse and the spirit of the other commentators, but put in one's own words, basically. So previous Bhavanubad written by him was again connection to the previous verse which was speaking about Gyan's futility without bhakti. So now comes the connection with that. In the previous verse it was spoken about Gyan. So now Guru Maharaj says, but what about yoga unto itself? Coming to this verse. Brahma asserts that there is a long history of yogis hearing from devotees about Krishna and then mixing their yoga with bhakti, offering the fruits of their desires and deeds to him, and thereby attaining him, or liberation, whatever the case, through yoga mixed with bhakti. And, I don't know, it's not the end of the commentary. Thus, rather than rejecting bhakti, as in the previous verse, those yogis and jnanis who embrace bhakti, even partially, attain their ideal. So I know this is a point that Guru Maharaj has made 16,108 times in his classes, and that's the reason for that. We see Brahma himself is making this point many, many times in different ways, in the same verse, in the same series of prayers. So here again, there are yogis who are described offering their actions in the spirit of surrender to Bhagavan, like what, which is not the same as pure bhakti. No, it's always important to draw the line. It's not the same to offer everything you do to Krishna than pure bhakti. What's the difference? For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a famous verse which speaks about offering whatever you do to Bhagavan. Chapter 9, verse 27. Yat karosi yat snasi yat yugosi dadasi yat yat tabasasi kaunteya tat kurusya madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give as a gift, whatever austerities you perform, do everything as an offering to me. Madarpan. So that verse sounds like pretty, wow, that's like highest of the highest. But actually, the Acharya said no. Because in this particular practice, you are doing something and then you are offering that to Krishna. But real bhakti, I mean pure bhakti in our conception, what the Bhagavatam gives us is not offering the fruits of what you do after you do it to Krishna, but offering yourself before starting whatever you're doing, and then doing whatever. I mean, not whatever, anything, but whatever you do, you are offered. You are the offering, if you will. You are prasad, to become prasad. That's the famous statement by Prahlad in the Bhagavatam. Shravanam kirtanam vishnushmananam palsivanam archanam bandhanam dasyan sakhyam atma nivedanam iti pumsar pitabhishnur bhaktis chenna balakshamam kriyeta bhagavatyada. Kriyeta bhagavatyada, he's saying. No? He mentioned these nine aspects of bhakti, hearing, chanting, remembering, and so on. And then here's the word adha. which Adha means different things, but generally translated as to do this practice completely. And almost all the commentators say completely means that the offering is identical with the act. It's not that there's the act and there comes the offering. Okay, I did all this. This is for you, Bhagavan. So, if you will, the self is first offered as the basis of the act. That's basically the idea of the type of bhakti that Prahlad is suggesting, with Saranagati as a foundation. Saranagati is already there as a preliminary condition before whatever a devotee is doing. That's basically the idea. Offering yourself, and basically there's no difference between the act and the fruit or the result, what's coming after between. So, of course, again, in this case, the situation of the yogis described here is a little bit different. They are offering their practice or their whatever they may be doing for the pleasure of Bhagavan at some point. That's mentioned in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. He says, Ishvara Pranidhan. One has to surrender to Ishvara. So there's place for at some point of one's yogic discipline to do that. There's this famous yoga acharya called Krishnamacharya. You may have heard about him. He was a guru of Iyengar and Pattabhi Joyce, who are quite well known nowadays. Their guru was the same one called Krishnamacharya. And actually he was a Sri Vaishnava. But he was a yogi at the same time. He will say that the goal of yoga is Vaikuntha. Interestingly. In this case, mostly it may be Shantarasa. That's the more like yogic prospect into the Vaikuntha. Like more, as Kunash will say, like beatific vision of the reality there and so on. So that's also a little bit this difference between how a yogi will include bhakti in their equation and how we as prospective bhaktas are trying to including ourselves in the bhakti equation. So the bhakti equation is already there and we are expected to jump. And that's all basically. So let's go to some of the elder commentators. Till now we have seen just the person, Guru Maharaj's Bhavanubad. We have some minutes, yeah. Do we have eternity? Yeah. Anantakata, forever. Anantakata. So let's begin with Sridhar Swami's commentary. He's the generally elder, venerated commentator in our Gaudiya tradition. I won't be sharing everything that every commentator is saying, because many times they are saying the same thing. And even Guru Maharaj is mentioning some things that actually are from the commentaries, so I'm trying to complement or sometimes repeating something worthy of emphasis. So Sridhar Swami, in his commentary, he says, yogic trance takes place by bhakti, not otherwise. That's like his sutra-like version of this verse. Trance, which he's referring here to the yogic samadhi, takes place by bhakti, not otherwise. So, no bhakti, no samadhi. Basically. You want samadhi, yogi? No problem. But bhakti is required. It's like the active principle. If you take out the active principle, you can have everything else. As you were saying yesterday, like Prabhupada will give that example, you can have lots of zeros, but if you don't bring the one to the equation, what's the meaning of having one zero and 10 million zeros? It's zero still. But if you have many zeros and you include the one, all those zeros now suddenly have some value. So bhakti is the one, if you will. So that's what Sridhar Swami says, basically. Which is not a little thing, but he's basically making this point. And again, if you study the yogic discipline, yama, niyama, asana, prana, from the beginning, yama, niyama, which are the preliminary foundation of conduct for the yogi before even sitting for asana, and pranayama, and dharan, pratyahara, dharan, dhyan, samadhi, first yama, niyama, and there you have Ishvara Pranidhan, which means surrender to Ishvara. Again, in a yogic way at least. We won't try to make oh, there Patanjali is promoting the Sudha Bhakti Rupa Goswami. No need to stretch the thing to that level. But he's making the point, you need that as a foundation before even sitting for the asana, sitting for meditation. So you need to have that like disposition, no? I surrender what I am about to do, my practice, so it can conduct me to my goal, samadhi, whatever. Let's go to Sanatan Goswami's then commentary. He will have a good number of things to say. His Brihat Vaishnav Toshani. The name of his commentary of the Bhagavatam is Vaishnav Toshani, which means for the pleasure of the Vaishnavs. That's the name of the commentary. So he mentions again, many of their counters are in connection to the previous verses. So he will say in the previous verse, as we mentioned, he will so say that bhakti is Shreya Shritim, which means the path of the highest good or auspiciousness. And then Sanatana Goswami says, these are not just words. Because you understand, no? His point, I mean, this, we have heard this type of thing so many times for decades, but somehow here we are. Here I am on this. I mean, here I am surrounded by you, so it's a blessing. But my point is, sometimes we take for granted these things. No? Oh yeah, bhakti is the highest thing, and just by chanting holy name once, and sadhu sangha is the sword. I know that, so I don't need to repeat those things, I already know, but we are not walking the talk, we are not dancing the talk. So Sanatana Goswami saying that, he would say that bhakti is a path of the highest blessedness. These are not just words. Like implying, if you are not there, what you are doing with your bhakti? How much seriously you are taking your bhakti? Where you are now in your life and in your bhakti? I mean, because the potential of bhakti is that one. Now, full blessing, full auspiciousness, and beyond your wildest imagination. This is not artavat. Artavat means exaggeration. As we know, to consider the things exaggeration is an aparat. To consider the glories of Srinam, exaggeration is an aparat. To consider the statements of Shastra about the efficacy of bhakti or sadhu sangha is an aparat. And I could add, on some level, to take those for granted. Maybe you won't say, oh, no, there's not an exaggeration, but somehow you take them for granted. That's some form of neglecting all those principles as well. So Sanatana Goswami said, the truth of this statement, that bhakti is the highest of all auspiciousness, has been verified many times in the past. Mm-hmm. So again, he's mentioning this in the context, in the past, many yogis attained perfection by that. Like implying, even in the past, even the yogis, what speak of bhakti, even yogis acknowledge how bhakti is so crucial for success for a long time ago. So I hope you bhaktas over there are taking this idea even more seriously in the present. He's not saying this directly, but again, if you have an ear to hear, you will say, okay, that one went for me. Well, that's for me. Mm-hmm. So again, these are not just words. Mm-hmm. Don't take bhakti for granted. We spoke about that, I don't know where already, too many travels, but I think New Jersey. One point came this idea, don't take bhakti for granted. Of course, I was speaking in an audience mostly with second-generation devotees, that they were telling me themselves, like, we were born in a bhakti environment, so for us, bhakti was like the common thing, the norm, normal. So we got accustomed to bhakti. It was like, yeah, of course. Harinam, of course. Deity, of course. Prasham, and of course. But no, of course, no. That takes you to take it for granted. And you don't have a second point of reference to contrast and really appreciate the dimension and depth of all that. So many of them were telling me, who now have my age or a little bit less, they were like rediscovering bhakti. Because they grew with bhakti all around them, but in such a way that they took that for granted, that got accustomed to the extraordinariness that still was there. So after some time, they needed some, whatever, experiences or distance or some headache or whatever, to realize, oh my God, bhakti is some, much more of what I thought it was during all these decades. So rediscovering their own roots, if you will. No? So again, we don't need to be second generation devotee to fall in that. No, or to, we need also to pay serious attention to that. We need to not get stuck into a very scripted version of bhakti, if you will. No, we spoke about that the other day also, bhakti beyond the script. Krishna himself goes beyond his script as Mahaprabhu. He's no longer Krishna, he's something else, something more. He goes beyond the script to give something to us that is coming from his own going beyond the script. So somehow for us to fully appreciate that, at some point we will need to go beyond the script as well. Not beyond the scriptures. Beyond the script. No, try to... There are a few letters that make the whole difference. We are not expected to go beyond scripture. But scripture is inviting us to go beyond the script. So, and again, beyond the script means you have those, all these magical formulas you know from day one. Okay, I have to do this. This is the reply to this question. I'm not this body and blah, blah, blah. I have all the answers. Perfect. 16 rounds are in play. 4 wrecks are there. I mean, end of life, Vishnu Dutas, Golok, non-stop flight there. That's all, basically, right? Wait for a few years and you'll realize that there's something more between the chant Hare Krishna and the be happy, as Guru Maharaj will say. No? So at some point you need to go beyond the script, beyond that, like, quote-unquote, official version of Krishna consciousness, take it for granted. And you need to rediscover the same tradition you embrace as your own, and to discover yourself in the context of that. So again, we can just continue speaking about this topic the rest of the class and my visit to North Carolina and Michigan and Alachua, but we are called to move on at some level, with your permission. But this is the very main first point Sanatana Goswami is making. This is known for a long time. These are not just words. Be careful of not getting accustomed to the extraordinary. So in a healthy way, keep pushing yourself out of the comfort zone, because only out of the comfort zone real learning is possible. In the comfort zone, there's no learning at all. Of course, too much outside of the comfort zone is too neurotic also, neurosis. So try to find a balance in that. So then Sanatana Goswami mentions about the name Achyuta, because remember, every time the name of Krishna is invoked in any verse in Bhagavatam Gita, it's not just, try to explain that in our Benu Gita series in Madhuvam, that it's not that the gopis are calling Krishna whatever name they are calling, Madhava or whatever, just, okay, because of the meter, we need this three-syllable name, so let's put it there, so that fits nicely. Now, there is a particular reason. So here the same, no? Different names are throughout the verses in the prayers, and there is, our acharyas have shown, there's some reason for that. So Achyuta, infallible. Yeah? I mean, you can explain the name outside of any context that it still makes sense. Krishna is infallible. But in which sense he's infallible? I mean, so many senses, of course. You can say he never fails, he's perfect. He doesn't never becomes a conditioned soul. But in this particular case, it means he doesn't fail in giving the desired results by performance of bhakti. Whoever accepts bhakti, whether it be a yogi embracing bhakti from their own pursuit, Krishna is not failing in bestowing them the desired fruits of their practice. Again, what to speak if you embrace bhakti exclusively, how much Krishna is infallible in reciprocating with his loving devotees who took exclusive shelter in him. How much Achyuta he becomes. If you will. He's always Achyuta, but we can speak about levels of Achyutaness. So Achyuta means again this, he because of whom there is no fall. That's technically speaking how you have to explain Achyuta. He because of whom there is no fall. In other words, you as a yogi took shelter in bhakti. Because of bhakti and because of Krishna being, I mean, obliged to bhakti, there is no fall. You will obtain what you need. Of course, you can extend that to the idea of nobody can fall from Vaikuntha. Just by having Krishna that name, he's if you play out the implications of Krishna's name by Achyuta, one of the conclusions is no fall from Vaikuntha, but that's another series. But Krishna, again, in other words, is he fully reciprocates according to each one's approach. According to how you approach me, worship me, which mood and which desire, I reciprocate accordingly. So he's achyuta in that way. He doesn't fail. Of course, if we want to quote Napareham Nirabhadi Sanjayama, Krishna telling the gopis, I cannot reciprocate my love to you, I failed. That's on another level, no? Or of achyutaness, no? Or chyuta, whatever. What else? Sanatana Goswami gives another meaning. Sanatana Goswami is very expert in his purpose to give like a meaning of the verse or an explanation, and then he will say, or, and he will give another one, and then he will say, or, and you'll have sometimes 6-7 ors. And generally, each one becomes exponentially more esoteric, if you will. Not necessarily always, but that's how he likes to generally do it. So he says, or, there is another explanation. Because of bhakti, the yogis, that is, the sadhus who associate with you, understood your eminent abode, meaning either by Vaikuntha Lok or the status of pure love, that is, they determine that this is the highest result to be attained, they attain it. So here's given some other meaning which can apply a little bit beyond the yogis who want a yogic perfection, but meaning, okay, devotees who... Or also, there are different ways here. You can have the yogi who wants to attain whatever realization they want to attain, Santa Rasa Vaikuntha, or even Brahman. There are yogis who, they mix with bhakti, attain it. But there are some others, this is the idea here, who originally started practicing yoga, and they start to include bhakti, and they start to become attracted to you, and eventually they just went for bhakti. So they attain you, the one who is in front of me, Brahma is saying. Not I am Vishnu, this, that. No. So again, there are different possibilities on the same verse. Although in general, it gives some ideas. One idea, the commentators give different nuances to that. And then Sanatana Goswami brings one objection. That's classical also from our acharyas. They try to make the topic very strong. This is called Nikanana Nyaya, which means Stuna Nikanana Nyaya, which means I have experience of that here, pounding the post. No, I do it with my forehead. And one day I was pounding a post here and I just... whatever. It's part of the standard here. No, Syam Saki did it recently, so... It's part of the local tradition. So the idea of Suna Nikanana Nyaya is, in order to make your point even more comprehensive, you do not only present your point, but analyze the counterpoints or the arguments against those points, refute them, and establish your point even in a more powerful way. So in this context, some of our acharyas may present arguments. So here's Sanatana Goswami himself brings the arguments. Jiva Goswami does that a lot in the Sandarbha. That's wonderful. He presents arguments that, I mean, you could never even think of the positive points he's making, but not even about the arguments he's making. Even the argument was like, wow. Maybe his opposers will never get to those arguments. You know, he was even defeating the opposing party regarding what they should be saying to him. That means they are really willing to be comprehensive in their presentation. It's not just, this is the only real truth, everything else is crap, nobody can tell anything, just accept this. No. What else everyone else is saying? Okay, let's include it and just deal with that. How to integrate, harmonize, explain, refute, whatever the case. And this is the final presentation. So, Sanatana Goswami is saying something like that here. Someone might object. I mean, it's not a big argument, but some slight objection. Still, someone may say, isn't it that bhakti, which causes the attainment of the topmost destination, is hard to come by? Brahma's response is, in this verse, the bhakti is set in motion by a discourse about you. Those topics are more excellent. Like implying, I mean, if you tell me bhakti is difficult to execute, Brahma is saying, Bhakti mostly activates by hearing Harikatha. How much difficult that is. I mean, you have just to, move your body to the place of Harikatha and just, you have a nice cushion there and some water and then some ladu will come and compared to going to a cave on a deer skin and who knows what, I mean, it's not so difficult. Of course, you have to hear from proper source with proper attitude and walk the talk. And there are some stuff in between, but comparatively, and again, the topics here is saying are more excellent, very, very, most excellent, more attractive. So that's the result of sadhu sangha. You attain a taste for Harikatha. This is Sayyidi Bhagavatam. Shusru so shradadhanasya vasudeva katha ruchin. Sian mahatsivaya vipra punya tirta nishivana. This is said, by association with the sadhus, increased taste for Harikatha is coming. So that's the fruit of sadhu sangha. You start to, because again, the idea is, that's what you will do in sadhu sangha. In sadhu sangha, you speak Harikatha. So the fruit of sadhu sangha is to increase taste for Harikatha, because that's what's going on there. If your taste for Harikatha is not increasing, what type of sadhu sangha are you having? Basically, is the question. So tam prasangam mama vidya samit. So many verses in the Bhagavatam speaking about the same thing. In the special association of my devotees, hearing this rasayana katha, this elixir-like topics of mine, faith comes, bhava comes, prema comes, one after the other, anukravishyati. And Jiva Goswami, in this context, trying to make the point, this same point, he quotes another verse from the Bhagavatam. I'm just selecting a few ones, although you may feel, Maharaj, there are too many verses you are quoting. I'm just selecting the main ones they are quoting. They like to quote a lot. And it's never a lot, that's my point, because we have to make a point comprehensively. So another verse from the Bhagavatam, which ends up saying, Shrama eva hi kevalam. Guru Maharaj likes to quote this verse, 1:1-8, to add to your sloka book there. So it's saying like Varnashram, in this case Varnashram, not Jnana or Yoga, but Varnashram, which does not produce attraction for the topics of Hari, is a waste of time, basically. So that's another way of putting that. If you do not get attracted to Harikatha, what's the purpose of Varnashram? And if you get attracted to Harikatha, what's the purpose of Varnashram? That's basically the logic. Uddhava says the same thing in the Bhagavatam. Kim brahma janmavir ananta katara sasya. Ananta katara sasya. If you attain ananta katara asa, if you relish the mellows of ananta katara, of the unlimited topics about Hari, kim brahma janmavir. What's the purpose of being born as a Brahmin or as a Brahma even means? No? So the idea is, if you get born as Brahma, but you don't have taste for Harikatha, what's the purpose of being Brahma? And if you have taste for Harikatha, what's the purpose of being Brahma? So this is the type of logic that our acharyas give to us, no? And trying to make this exclusive emphasis, bhakti, Harikatha, please. Everything is there. And these are not just words, just in case. Every time I finish one sentence today, you try to, in your mind, repeat, these are not just words. That's a very nice exercise. Not today only, no? Every time, these are not just words. These are not, because some part of you may say that, indirectly, subtly. Oh yeah, I heard that. I heard that means these are just words, basically. These are not just words. Bhagavatam is not different from Bhagavan. It's the literary embodiment of Hari. So every word from the Bhagavatam is Krishna, not just words. Or Krishna is not different from certain words. His name is not different from him. The Bhagavatam is not different. So they are words, but they are not just words. No, it's Krishna in the form of words, if you want to put it like that. Let's see what Jiva Goswami says after Sanatana Goswami. I will share, Jiva Goswami shares some similar things. His commentary is pretty much similar to Sanatana Goswami's, but he shares some conclusion, his conclusion to his commentary to this verse. He says like this, with an increasing prem, the person then attains with surrender an intimate relationship with you. So we see that here Jiva Goswami is seeing another level of attainment, not just a yogi who wants whatever, mukti, or no? He's seeing someone who attains what Brahma wants to attain. Remember that Brahma wants to attain something. So whatever through whatever he's saying, he's trying to to further establish and confirm his own longing and attainment. How to attain that? To confirm to himself. So with an increase in prem, the person then attains, with surrender, an intimate relationship with you. All or with unlimited glories. This is a suitable result for bhakti dedicated to you. O Lord, you do not fail to give the desired results by performing but performance of bhakti, no? Achyuta. So basically that's what Jiva Goswami is saying, which is kind of wrapping up what we were mentioning till now. Like Guru Maharaj likes to mention, no? I mean, you are Achyuta, you do not fail in giving result to whoever engaged in bhakti, and Guru Maharaj will say, if you have your, that bhakti basically means if your heart is in the right place, you cannot do bhakti wrong. Which is a very, again, general. Of course, we have to do the task, the work to have the heart in the right place. Now, we have not to downplay that idea, no? or underestimate that idea. Oh, no, it's just about having the heart in the right place. Yes. But, I mean, is your heart in the right place? Yes. It can be a little bit in a better place? Yes. So it's not in the right place then. If your heart could be in a better place and it is not, then it's not in the right place. You are just using the idea to remain in a complacent situation. I'm not a bad Maharaj, I'm not a killer, I'm following this principle. Yeah, okay, but we have to grow. So I think that's an important point, no? Because we may hear this word from our Guru Maharaj, if your heart is in the right place. So what happens inside of us when we hear those ideas from our Gurudev? If your heart is in, we immediately say, oh, my heart is in the right place. He's speaking about me. But he's taking care of me. He's not mentioning my name in the class. And I'm so humble that I won't tell anyone that he was actually speaking about me. Or maybe I will, after the class, yeah. How well you know me, Guru Maharaj. I'm joking, but sometimes it's not that the joke. You know the truth is, because they say in jest, the deepest truth is saying in jest. So when Guru Maharaj is saying, if your heart is in the right place, you cannot fail. So what's happening inside of us? Again, I'm not... Again, saying go to the neurosis extreme. My heart is not in the right place. I'm a cheater. It's not. I'm not saying that, but also not quickly running to it's me. No, maybe not to that extreme, but I'm in the right place. Yeah, it's okay. That's not for me. Next idea. Let's see if it applies. No, no. How much it can be in the right? What means right place? I mean, I did it right. Yeah, but you can do it better. No. I mean, yeah, you cook the rice, it didn't burn. Okay, but you may have added some spice and some other things and some further bhakti. And it was better. It was right, but right doesn't mean best. You know? So the guru says heart's in the right place. We have all the things. What does it mean for him to have the heart in the right place? Again, not to over-demand ourselves, but also to see which is the trajectory that he's like presenting, the prospect. as we were saying the other day, when Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, for the devotee is free from all karma. And you can take that option. Okay, free from all karma. I'm a devotee. You have to ask yourself, what idea does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has in mind when he says a devotee? And how, where I am in that connection. Again, not to get discouraged, just to be objective and trace my trajectory in a realistic way. But yeah, the generosity is there. That's the point. Nonetheless, generosity is there, but we should be humble and sincere about not abusing the generosity. If someone is being generous, real generous, it should be humbling for us. I mean, if I'm really being really generous to you, if you are sincere on some minimum level, you won't abuse my generosity. Actually, my generosity will invoke in you humility to to realize where you are actually in the context of that generosity. I mean, this generosity is really showing where I am. It's not coming for me to create a fiction ideal. Oh, I'm so great, that's why this is coming, or something like that. So yeah, Krishna says in the Gita, no? Neha bikramanasasti pratyabhayana, you know, whoever engages in bhakti, there's no loss, no diminution. We are not to abuse those statements, no? Like relaxing on the strength of, oh, Krishna is so generous. No? Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranasati, yes, my devotee never perishes again. Oh, I can do whatever I like, I will never perish, and you become even proud in the name of following Bhagavad Gita. What to speak, apichet sudaracharo, Krishna in the Gita, the same. No? My devotee engages in the worst possible stuff, bhajante mama nanya bhag, but is determined in worshipping me. You have to, sometimes you say, what, skip that second line. Sadureva samanta vyahyam samabhyasito hisa, oh, how nice. Now, even if my devotee does the topmost nonsense, I consider him a saint, and he very soon attains everlasting peace. Yeah, yeah, that's line 1, 3, and 4. No? Line 2, bhajante mama nanya bhag, bhajante mama nanya bhag. He's exclusively dedicated to worshiping me. So, of course, different interpretations to this verse. Many acharyas will say, this is actually pathetically speaking, because someone that dedicated can never engage in sudurachar, in very bad behavior. Or that can apply to the gopis in the highest realm. They seem to be engaged in the worst transgression, but actually, they are the gopis. Mm-hmm. Or like Guru Maharaj will say, no? Krishna is so much in love with his devotees that he says, if my devotees misbehave and you glorify their misbehavior, I will put my attention on you. And Guru Maharaj will say, this is madness. Krishna is mad, in love with his devotees. Love is blind. But again, we are not like to abuse these instructions. Oh, here's an entry point for my comfort zone and I can stay there forever or something. Mm-hmm. So again, all this also applies interestingly to Brahma, no? Because again, Brahma made some mistake. He tried to kidnap all the boys and calves. That's not like joke. I mean, that was aparad towards Krishna's form. He thought, this guy is an imposter, he's not my guru. I'll show that to the world. And he tried to... So he's realizing, I made such a huge nonsense, but such grace is coming. I mean, he's in front, he's having direct sakshat darshan of Krishna. He's having in front of his face the object of his ultimate attainment. Why? There's no reason for that. That's causeless mercy. You did the opposite to deserve that. You tried to, you offended the form of Krishna. You kidnapped his friends. You thought you did, and cops. You deserve a very nice reaction. The reaction is Krishna appearing in front of you, giving this unique darshan. So my point is, Brahma is totally humble. Again, he's not abusing Krishna's generosity. That's the point we want to make. He's totally moved by that. Let's go to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to wrap up this series of commentators. Such an anxiety trying to continue with the other commentators and not continue with But there is a land in eternity that is waiting for us to never end. The class will never end, basically. There is no need to to go to the next verse, if you will. It's all one long, deep verse. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, this verse can also be taken as a rejection of the yoga process by Brahma. Remember the original idea of the verse. After him having rejected Gyan in the previous verses, so he rejected Gyan, he's rejecting yoga here, like establishing bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. Here Brahma implies, after practicing for a long time, one may come to the platform of devotional service and attain firm devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna. That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's take is here. No? Like after a long time of practice, yogic practice or whatever practice, you can come to the platform of bhakti. Like another way of showing bhakti is the topmost yoga, bhakti is not a cheap attainment. Bahunam janmanamante, samahatma sudurlava, jnanamammam prapadante, vasudeva sarvamiti, jnanamammam prapadante, vasudeva samahatma sudurlava. A famous verse of the Gita. After many, many births, Krishna says, Bahunam janmanamante, Vasudeva, someone gets to know Vasudeva is everything, gets to that type of devotional insight. And to reach that position is not so easy. Very rare. Very rare it speaks about how bhakti is coming by extraordinary grace, as Brahma is witnessing now. I mean, that's extraordinary. It's rare. It's extraordinary. I do not deserve it. It's coming in the last expected moment. When I deserve the worst chastisement, this is coming. I mean, what's going on here? There's no math to follow here. So remember, four heads of Brahma are still spinning. From another, each verse is a new Bimoham for Brahma. I mean, his four heads are spinning, but for different reasons. Every verse. Higher, the verses are escalating more and more, so the four heads of Brahma are upgrading their spinning in each verse, basically. So this is a very important point made here also, that Krishna is making here and throughout the Brahma is making here and throughout the stuti, that Bhagavan is only attained by bhakti. Now, what to speak of? Yoga, jnana, being successful by mixing it with bhakti. To see you here, Brahma is seeing Krishna, only by bhakti I can see you. And of course, Brahma is a devotee of some sort, if you will. He will consider himself as such. Somehow I'm a devotee of some sort. In the beginning of creation, I met my Gurudev. There is some, so that bhakti came to me, and now, oh, by bhakti I can see you, by bhakti I can know you. Okay, bhakti, Brahma was quite predominated by four heads, no, understanding head, but this Brahma stuti is a whole statement of namanta eva, heads to the ground. Now he was taking turns with the four heads, offering pranam to Krishna, it is described. 1, 2, 3, 4. But as Guru Maharaj will say, putting your head to the ground will give you much more knowledge than trying to know everything, looking everything from up to down. You have to look everything from down to up. So Bhagavan is only understood by, attained, known by bhakti. Bhaktihami kaya graha, Krishna is saying in the Bhagavatam. I'm only attained by bhakti. There are many verses like this. I mean, we can just make a Guinness records of quoting verses after verse about how many times in Shastri say, only by bhakti I can attain. Not even by yoga. Na sada yati mam yogo, na sankhyam dharma udava, na svadaya stapasya go, jato bhaktir mamorjita. Krishna is saying to Uddhava also. Not the study of the Veda, not sankhya, no yoga, not all this stuff is will make you attain me, but bhakti. And in the Gita, yogi nama api sarvesham madgatinanda. Of all the yogis, karma yogi, jnana yogi, ashtanga yogi, the topmost yogi is he who worships me with full love. Madgatinantaratmana, who has taken full shelter of me. Shradhavam bhajate yajuma, who has full faith. Yogi nama api sarvesham. According to me, here is Yogeshwar is speaking. So he can speak about yoga, he's Yogeshwar. According to me, the highest yogi is the bhakti, the bhakta. The highest yoga is the bhakti. So Krishna is not easy to understand, you know. I mean, it's not a joke, it's not a cheap thing. And these are not just words. So what to speak of Braja Krishna? I mean, God is not easy to understand. What to speak of Braja Krishna and Sakya Bhav? That is specifically like bewildering feature for someone, normal person, like boy in picnic and doing all the stuff that they are doing. It's not so easy. So Brahma is making here some emphasis from all possible sides on bhakti, because without bhakti you cannot understand Krishna, and he wants to, not to understand, but to attain Krishna, to love Krishna, to serve Krishna in a certain way. And he's realizing, without bhakti this will never happen. And I want this to happen. I want so badly, you say in English? Okay. So he's making a very specific emphasis how much bhakti is required for this to happen. He's making the emphasis for himself to begin with, Brahma. I want to attain you in Sakya Bhav, but I realize this can only happen in through bhakti, and through a very unique bhakti, Gyan Sunya Bhakti, brain dead bhakti, as listeners will call it. The one that is going on in Braj, where nobody knows you as God, but I mean, I'm having a glimpse of that, but now first I need to establish you are God, Krishna's tu Bhagavan, so yeah, but I'm having a glimpse of what comes next. No? So all the things are happening, meanwhile Brahma is praying. So again, this is Brahma's wish,
your ultimate wish,
long-term goal, Sakyabhava. So he himself is making this emphasis for himself to begin with, and of course, for anyone else who may like to follow in his footsteps to the pastures with Krishna's friends. So you just take notes in that case. Okay, we are almost concluding, but let me share some last words from Sri Jiva Goswami from Bhakti Sandarbha, because also Jiva Goswami is quoting many of these verses in his Sandarbhas, and he's elaborating on them there. From Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 96, he's saying, he's concluding, sharing the gist of this verse, as a wrapping up. So the gist of this verse implies that these yogis first failed in attaining their goals through their yoga practice alone, and thus they surrender to Bhagavan and attain not only their desired fruits, but a higher one. They obtained bhakti in the form of taste towards your katha, and by such contact, they attain a liking for you directly, the object of such narrations. By this, they first attained Atma Tattva and then Bhagavat Tattva. In other words, Jiva Goswami's take is, this yoga is mentioned in this verse first. Try yoga by itself without bhakti, they fail. Then invoke bhakti, start to work, but eventually they realize, okay, but bhakti is the real deal, as we mentioned. So they went to bhakti. And interestingly, the verse saying they obtain bhakti. Oh, bhakti is not inherent. Sorry if it sounds I'm promoting my book. I'm just repeating what Shastri is saying. Bhagavatam says over and over again, satsanga labdhaya bhaktya. Bhakti is attained by sadhu sangha. I mean, so many times it's said. In the form of hearing your katha, they obtain bhakti, which of course for hearing your katha you need sadhu sangha. No? I mean, nowadays you may put play, but there is some sound involved in the MP3 or whatever, no? Recorded or the recording of what you are hearing. So sadhu sangha is there. And for that, they attain again a liking for you directly. And first, they obtain the realization of their own self because they were after that as yogis. So that's what's kind of in their equation, in their minds. Atma tattva, they obtain Bhagavat tattva. They obtain you, Bhagavan. Again, there are different possibilities of that. Some of them by Kontha Santarasa, some of them higher and whatever. So again, in other words, and this is an interesting point, for those yogis who fully embrace bhakti, like the ones that Jiva Goswami mentions here, their attainment, because here this verse is saying paramgatim, which means the highest thing, the supreme destination. So since the verse can be applied to those who attain Krishna, or those who attain even what they desire as the highest, Brahman, Santarasa, we can speak here that this idea of the highest destination, according to who it applies, can be the highest objectively speaking or the highest subjectively speaking. You follow? So for those yogis that Jiva Goswami has just spoken about, that fully embrace bhakti and attain Krishna in the highest realm, they are actually attaining the highest, objectively speaking, in terms of the rasa thermometer. Braja Krishna is the highest. But for those yogis who mix their yoga with bhakti to attain Brahman, Vaikuntha, they attain the highest, subjectively speaking. What's the highest for them? Which mostly is these two options, Brahma or Santa, rasa in Vaikuntha. And one more thing with which Jiva Goswami concludes, and he concludes saying that, because he's speaking about bhakti and how bhakti allows one to know Bhagavan, and all the results of other practices are included there. So Jiva Goswami will conclude quoting one verse from the Bhagavad Gita, very important, nice verse, that shows that gyan ensues, you say in English, ensues? What means? Like comes only from bhakti. In other words, whatever you need to know, you will know in through as Guru Maharaj said, through love. Which is this verse? This is the 11th verse of the 10th canto, which is the last verse of the Chatur Shloki of the Bhagavad Gita. This fourth like seed verses according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. There are these four verses who kind of condense all that is in the 700 verses of the Gita, which are verses 8 to 11, 10th canto. So this is the last one. Another one for the sloka book. Tesame vanukampartam aham gyanajam tamaha nasayam yatma vavashto gyanadipena bhashvata. So Krishna there is saying, this is a very interesting verse, has many layers of meaning. But basically he's saying, to those who are tesame vanukampartam aham gyanajam tamaha nasayam yatma vavashto gyanadipena bhashvata. Basically, to those who are fully dedicated to me, I'll give them the jnana dipena. Jnana dipena is like the light of knowledge, no? By which they can come to me. The previous verse to this one is a similar idea. In the 10th verse, Krishna is saying, Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mamu payanti tetasam satata yuktanam bhayatam. That's an even more interesting verse in the sense of Krishna saying there, to those who are dedicated to love me with full affection, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. Interestingly, one may ask, but if someone is bhajatam priti purvakam, if one is worshipping Krishna with priti, with love, which type of buddhi, yogam tam, which type of intelligence do you need to go to him? I mean, if you are worshipping him with love, you don't need to arrive anywhere else. You are already there. So what's the meaning of why Krishna is saying that? No? So there's an interesting interpretation to that in the connection of basically the gopis of Vrindavan. And the commentators say, mostly Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Siddharmaya say, Krishna is saying, different ways, Siddhasamara is saying, to those who have a romantic attraction to me, and love me in romantic attraction, I will give them the intelligence to worship me as a paramour. No. Or, for those who are worshipping me in that paramour love, I will give them the intelligence to come to me. Because, why? Every single day, Shirada have to face so many obstacles to meet Krishna in the rendezvous every night. So she needs... to get to the meeting place. So Krishna is basically thinking about those things. I will inspire them to reach me, no? In our meeting point tonight or something. Of course, it's not what is read in the Bhagavad Gita at first read, but as Guru Maharaj has pointed in his commentary, Krishna is in Kurukshetra, but he's somewhere else. So, and that somewhere else has to do with all this. So anyhow, some ideas regarding these verses, which are not just words. And in the next verse that we will be seeing the day after tomorrow on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, just Brahma will clarify that although karmis or karma yogis, jnanis, yogis, all of them may get their respective desired results by mixing their practice with bhakti, the ultimate result that a devotee gets is very different in comparison from that obtained by the yogis, jnanis, who only use bhakti to create success in their own practice. Follow my point, right? Okay. So, of course, the fruit of the devotees will be the full form of Bhagavan, Krishna's too, Bhagavan. So, yeah, remember that Brahma here is praying, longing to worship for the rest of forever. So, we will see that on the day after tomorrow, and tomorrow we have that other Pandit Avir Bab Mahotsav, so also all of you invited to come physically and onlinely. But I don't know if there are any, we have some few minutes, if there is any question or something you may like to, or comments, something you may like to share.
I'm just, I know Jalal Chandra used to talk about it too when we were studying the Sundarbas. It just seems so incomprehensible in a way that a yogi or someone who, a jnani, who really his desire is to merge into Brahman, and then he takes up a practice of bhakti, so he comes in contact with the personal form of Krishna, Someone like that.
So, then you have experience that that's possible. Yeah, I imagine the Dulag Chandra always like to share this commentary by Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur from third canto of Kapila Dev, where it speaks about the hook and all these ideas. Mm. We can read it these days, that's interesting. But yeah, basically he's mentioning how the yogi, those type of practitioners are using bhakti in those terms. And again, it's for us, it's almost impossible to understand how someone can. But again, it's pretty subjective in the sense that for us it's difficult to understand because we are, once, if you want to put it, biased by bhakti samskars. No? So for us it's like, I mean, they're all attractive. I mean, see. No? But they have received such strong samskars in the direction of radical non-duality that they are, again, we know that some of them will turn to the all attractive, but some of them will have that particular goal in mind. And I mean, we know how powerful samskaras can be. We know about that, maybe for bhakti or for conditioned existence. So just try to think, okay, gyan samskaras are, as Guru Maharaj will say, that they are more powerful than material samskaras. They are not more powerful than bhakti samskaras in one sense, if you take bhakti from a certain way. But if you have samskaras for material enjoyment, they can be strong. But in order to have gyan samskaras, means you have to go beyond this world. So those samskaras must be more difficult, more powerful, and therefore more difficult to leave. So that's why generally to say that for bhakti it's easier that if you are a karmi, if you will, and not a jnani. Because the karmi, yes, it's influenced by karma, but material samskara, those are not that powerful. So bhakti can, you know, we may be more open to that, but the jnani is like, that's complex.
So Krishna's always aware that they're not really going to ever turn to him and love,
because
it seems like,
I mean, Brahman is a part of him. We have to keep in mind this point. No, we are speaking about the non-dual absolute, Advaita Gyan Tattva. I know it's important to keep Brahman. Bhagavatam saying, Bhadanti Tattva Vidas Tattvam Jnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabd. So the wise have described the reality Tattva as non-dual consciousness, which express itself in the form of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So they want to go to Brahman for eternity. That's still the absolute. Of course, our Acharya said that's hell in a Baba-like way, because if not, they are committing apparat towards the absolute. No? So for us, by comparison with the prospect we have for Bhakti Rasa and Lila and so on, I mean, nothing. But if you don't have those bhakti samskars, eternal residence in Brahman in comparison to some
material.
Yeah, something. For some it makes sense, and it'd be because of certain association. And so, but again, yeah, Krishna knows that because he is that as well. We have to be careful not to create this like dichotomy and duality, like, hey, here's Brahman, and here's Krishna, and here's Paramatma, and so on. But they're all just one single non-dual reality, and there are different degrees of penetration on that. But we are speaking about the same thing. And that reality is the same thing, but how we approach that will make us see that in one way or another. Like if you are, I don't know, in the subway station and you're waiting for the subway, and at the distance you see some light in the tunnel. Oh, yeah. I mean, the subway is already there, but you see light. You say, okay, that's it. And then you see the subway, but you don't see the people inside the subway. And then you see the subway, the doors open, there's people inside the subway. You can enter and interact with the people. So, I mean, contemporary explanation for Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So the three are the same thing. But some people may be just like focused or attracted by certain reasons to one or the other. Again, and there's an important point, because I know that always devotee may think, but why Krishna is allowing that to happen, and one is.
Yeah, yeah.
But what will be the other thing? I mean, he should not allow that to happen, and he should force every jiva to enter Golok. That's not love. So then start to realize, love has some price, which is freedom, and freedom gives place for diversity, and not only diversity in here. No, choosing Maya and doing nonsense till you go to the Absolute. But freedom is even in choosing which section of the Absolute you will go. And I'm not only saying Golok, Ayodhya, or Vaikuntha, I'm saying Brahman. No? Mm-hmm. So that's part of, I mean, Krishna is allowing that to exercise our will. If not, we will be just robots. So that has some price. And he knows, he's omniscient, he will know the ultimate destiny of everyone. He's not creating that. The fact that he knows something doesn't mean that he's doing that, because if not, we are reduced to matter. And he's respecting one's will. I mean, that's pretty loving. I will say, no? To begin with. No? If I love you, I respect you as an individual, and I respect your choices. I may try to share some advice or ideas, but at the end of the day, you choose, and you're an individual. I don't want you without your choices, if you will. Of course, the idea is to polish our choices so we can, but there are levels and different choices on that level. Okay. Something else? We are almost 1 hour and a half, so.
I have a quick thing.
Yeah.
I was thinking when you were speaking about complacency and taking for granted the mercy, the offense of committing sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of like an offshoot of.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, this. I mean. We may be also taking for granted these 10 offenses, no? In the sense of, again, we know the script. No? I mean, in many temples, these 10 offenses to Srinama are recited every day, so you may even learn them by heart and put play, and you know them. But you are not considering the implications of them, or playing out like what you are saying. No? This offense may also refer to this idea of taking for granted, or taking for granted may end up in this offense. And we need to engage in that type of exercise and playing out the implications of the thing. It's not just, again, the script is one thing, but how that plays out, that means go beyond the script. Again, I'm not saying transgressing and being immoral or whatever, no, in the name of Raga Bhakti or something, but learning to, what Guru Maharaj tries to teach us, no, like just Shastri Yukti, no, try to develop a way of thinking according to Shastra, which does not only mean whatever I think has to be regarding what that verse say, but when I go to the verse, I have to be capable to think on that verse and expand for myself in my own life. I mean, all the things are alive, are not just like, this is it, literal, copy-paste, end of the story. So, yeah, I agree that remaining in a comfort zone, being complacent, having received such a gift as bhakti, which actually, I mean, if you remain complacent after receiving bhakti in your life, that's not a good combination. That means you are not, again, you're not understanding what's knocking on your door, because it's such a degree of undeserved grace and totally, I mean, uncommon, that it's calling you out of your comfort zone, but of course to a higher, Srila Samaras will say, home comfort. But that home comfort is out of the comfort zone. Home is not in the comfort zone. So, many of the offenses to Srinam, if you pay attention, it's not necessarily in connection to chanting of Srinam per se, but how you deal with bhakti, how you appreciate the gift, how much you are taking it for granted or not. So, we should be, again, non-neurotic, but careful, not in a fearful sense, but just in, I want not to lose sight of the reality of this. I don't want to misread this gift, basically. I don't want to take this as something that it is not. I don't want to... I know that I'm not fully conceiving the dimension of this. So if you have that in a healthy way, that idea and clear, I don't have a clear idea of how much merciful Mahaprabhu is, how deep the gift of my Guru Maharaj is. If you have that idea clear, you have service for the rest of your life, because that's your daily job, not to rediscover a new layer of depth, realization and gift and mercy and compassion coming. And that keeps you sober, if you will. You won't get proud. You won't get discouraged. You won't get so many of the things we got. Distracted, depressed, angry, who knows what. You know, like, and if you really take seriously this idea, that's protecting. I mean, you are totally protected from all this, from yourself, basically. So, and the opposite is taking the whole thing for granted. I mean, it's way worse of what it sounds, even. No? Oh, taking this for granted. You know, which are all the implications? You may end up seeing the whole thing as ordinary, basically. Or making bhakti a business, or making bhakti like your maid servant or something. And trying, starting to see all the extraordinary items of bhakti as gross tools for facilitating your selfish purposes. I mean, the potential is there. I'm not saying you are there, but I mean, if we do not take care, gradually you start to, digress now. Mm-hmm. In that direction. It's not that it happens today, tomorrow, no? Like, you do not end up being mad in the madhouse in one weekend. Gradually you got mad. And one day you are clinically labeled, okay, give this person the no? Okay. But it all started very slight way and gradually, and you start like, oh, okay, and surrender in the wrong direction. So something similar can happen. I mean, I don't want to, again, put anyone neurotically. You can go mad in the context of bhakti, but that can happen. Especially with these like great ideas, like spiritual ideas and transcendence and big lots of knowledge and saintliness and God acting through me and I'm receiving revelation. I don't know, so many things can happen. So you can use these very absolute and high concepts to justify the unjustifiable, and you can become serial killer in the name of the Bhagavad Gita or whatever, or a real womanizer in the name of Rasa Lila. Or I'm giving just very immediate gross examples, but it can happen in so many ways. So especially with such a detailed and deep theology we are receiving, it's very high, very detailed, great blessing, as much as you take care of that and deal with that with proper respect and appreciation. But if not, if you start to become accustomed to the most extraordinary thing, I don't know what will be the end result of such a combination. Taking for granted the highest of the highest, that's a dangerous cocktail.
Razor's edge.
Yeah, exactly, as Prabhupada said, razor's edge. Again, not for neurosis, but just not for complacency. No? Try to find the middle point in between the two. That's the art of every single day. No? How today I'm not complacent and I'm not neurotic. No? There is a place between the two. I must inhabit that one. And so on. Okay, thank you so much for your time, patience, presence, Sangha. All of you present here and there. And we'll see you tomorrow for Gadadhar Pandit Savir Bab. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Gaurada Madhav ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand Hari.